Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Thanks for listening. Over the last few weeks, we've been asking you, our listeners, to tell us how public the city's privately owned public spaces really are. These are public spaces like Zuccotti Park that were created by private developers in exchange for lucrative zoning bonuses from the city. So we asked you to tell us how public these public spaces really are, and you did it amazingly. You visited and reported on over 130 of the some 400 privately owned public spaces on our map. So first of all, thanks to so many of you for participating. And according to you, more than three quarters of the sites were pretty good, perfectly okay, at least open to the public and seemed safe. More than half of the sites were rated good or great, but roughly one quarter of the sites were rated terrible, not very accessible, if at all, or otherwise uninviting, and even in some cases perceived as unsafe. Joining me again to talk about the project is Yolaine Almanzar from our partners in this project, the New York World. Hi, Yolaine. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Nice to be back.
And joining us to talk about what actually makes for a good public space is Fred Kent, the president of the Project for Public Spaces Advocacy Group. Fred, welcome to WNYC.
Great to be here.
So, Yolaine, what did our listeners and your readers find? What's the headline?
Well, like you said, I mean, they did great. There were over 130 spaces visited, and they had a lot of good things to say about some of them. So why don't maybe we start with those?
Let's.
So one of the spaces they really seemed to key in on was a space at 145 West 67th Street. It's a little spot that seems to be part of the building entrance, but it's actually a public space that connects 67th and 68th Street between Broadway and Amsterdam. And there you can find flowers, benches, and a fountain so that people can kind of sit and relax if they wanted to. Another really great space they found was at 400 East 71st Street. This is another small plaza with places to sit, flowers, and lots of greenery. It looks to be part of the apartment complex, but a small sign on 71st Street does indicate that it is a public space. And I think another one that seemed to stand out really exceptionally was at 55 Water Street. People around there seem to call it the Elevated Acre. It's sort of this urban garden with a view of the East River and plenty of seats to sit on, and you can access it through Water Street from escalators or a stairwell.
Wow. It's kind of cool to have a secret, quiet, lovely spot in the city like that, but a public park is not supposed to be a hidden secret, right?
No, it probably shouldn't be. I mean, the point of these spaces is that they're supposed to be accessible and inviting to the public. So if at any point they don't seem to be a public space, they're probably violating the spirit of the law that created them.
So those are three examples that you just gave of some of the best privately owned public spaces,
right,
as rated by our listeners and your readers. But a quarter of the sites that people visited were rated bad. How bad are we talking?
Well, there's a variety of ways that they were rated bad. Either people didn't have any idea they existed, the spaces kept irregular hours, or guards prevented them from accessing the spaces. One of them was actually the Bank of New York building at 101 Barclay Street. At that particular place, there's a public lobby that is required to be accessible 24 hours to the public, but guards actually prevent people from accessing it. They're required to have ID, according to a spokesman from the company, and he calls it a secure building that's only open during normal work hours. Another space would have to be 345 East 80th Street. It's an East Winds condominium is what it's called. And one of our readers and listeners said that they had no idea this space existed, even though they've lived in the neighborhood for years. It's about a 7,000-square-foot plaza. While it's not required to have any benches or other amenities, it's supposed to be open 24 hours to the public. And the best part of this space is probably a small lawn that isn't readily accessible to the public. There's a hidden stairwell that kind of leads to it. The last space that I would have to highlight would be Windsor Court at 155 East 31st Street. One of our listeners and readers said that this plaza had actually been locked for years. And when we looked into the records, we found that in 2003, this space was actually fined by the Department of Buildings $2,500 for having a fence and a lock gate, which kind of violated the permit that allowed them to create this space. It's required to be open 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. or dark, whichever is later, and there's seating there, water fountain, and some bicycle parking. Property management said that it's been closed since May because of facade repair work on the building, and that they had really no knowledge of why the reader or listener said the plaza was locked for years.
Interesting. So even in the cases of these privately owned public spaces that are not apparently being made accessible, you know, to the tune of the agreements that were made, the owners of the buildings got some kind of extra zoning privileges or something from the city in exchange for creating these public spaces?
Right. In most of these cases, they've all received lucrative zoning concessions that translated probably into millions of dollars of profit. We actually have pending requests with city planning to get those accurate numbers to see what exactly were the points of the deal, and then we'll be making those readily available to your listeners and
Good.
Our readers.
So we'll definitely do at least one follow-up on this. So typically those zoning changes would be they get to build their buildings higher, things like that, right?
Right. They get more space. They get to build taller, bigger buildings, which translate in condominiums to more apartments to rent or in office buildings to more office space.
So Fred Kent, president of the advocacy group, the Project for Public Spaces. You probably know many of these spaces already. Are you surprised by the results we got from this project?
No, not at all. In fact, I'm surprised that there are as many good ones as there are. That many of those probably may be open, but that doesn't mean that people want to be in them, which is a whole other aspect of this. Well, there's a whole thing about comfort. When you go into a really good public space, say Bryant Park, you go in, you start smiling, you start seeing all the different options. When you go into some of these things that may be open and accessible, you look around and you say, well, there's not that much going on here. I can't play chess. There's no coffee or, you know, the kinds of things that you go to a place for.
Because you think a public space should be designed so that it builds community.
Yeah, builds community. It's a gathering place. There's a lot of reasons to be there. Maybe you go and you want to play cards there, you want to read, maybe someone's working on the flowers. I mean, it's like it's an active place. It isn't just sort of one of these leftover places that may be accessible, but is it really comfortable?
You even gave us a critique of one of the three spaces that Elaine rated among the best in her description just a minute ago, and that's the elevated plaza at 55 Water Street. Right. How come?
Well, it used to be much worse than it is, and they did make some improvements, but what else do you do up there? It's a nice garden, but why not have a coffee shop, you know, or a little cafe? And that'll drive three times the number of people up there. Maybe you do it temporarily with a food cart. But then when the weather's nice, you start bringing an audience there, and then that adds to the whole area around it. But also when you're down at the street level, it just looks like you're going into the building. You know, there's no presence on the street. There's no way to identify it.
Let me bring in one of our listeners who did participate in the project. Her name is Francesca, and she's on the phone with us now to talk about her experience with this. Hi, Francesca. Thanks so much for coming on with us.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How did you learn about our privately owned public spaces checking it out project, and where did you go?
Okay. Well, actually, my mother told me about it. She's a faithful listener.
Cool.
And so I went online and I saw how many places were near me and was shocked to find that one was right next door to, you know, I've lived here since 1976 and I had not a clue.
Where's that?
I live on 72nd. This is the Oxford, and supposedly it's a public space. I just thought it was part of their, you know, their door. It didn't look like a public space. And I look, there's a little water fountain. That's about the only thing.
Uh-huh.
And then I checked out their two huge condos, each a block on York. And supposedly they have plazas of 11,000 square feet. And the doorman said, what plazas? What public spaces? Not a clue. So it was really quite shocking. And then on 72nd by the river, there is one beautiful place with benches, and it's very peaceful and welcoming. But that's about it. It's amazing to me that they got all of these benefits and they've just happily gone about without doing anything.
Yolaine, did you follow up on Francesca's report in particular about that space?
Francesca's report, she actually did a great job. She was one of the standouts. She went to six or seven different spaces. So thank you, Francesca.
Oh, my pleasure.
So we actually, like I said, we have requests pending to city planning to follow up on all of these spaces. The unfortunate part is once we can't access these records, we can't really be sure what these spaces are supposed to be providing. So we're really hoping in the next following weeks to follow up on these spaces and figure out what exactly is it that's supposed to be there.
Great. Francesca, did you talk to your building management? I realize we didn't ask you to go that far, but did it make you ask anybody any questions about, what is this space and what is it actually supposed to be doing here?
Well, they just sort of were no. The people at, the buildings I went to, they just seemed like they did not have a clue. So, no, I didn't go beyond that.
Thank you very much for taking part. We really appreciate it and for reporting back.
Well, thank you.
And now, let's see. Let's take another caller who has a report on a privately owned public space, I think. Jeanette in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. There's a place between Park Avenue and Madison Avenue, like on 53rd, 54th. And every Christmas or every holiday season, they put a huge display of interactive, like, teddy bears. And they have a fishing scene and a cooking scene and a vegetable scene. And there's a Starbucks. It's beautiful. And not many people go there.
Is this, as far as you know, a privately owned public space?
Oh, yeah, I would say so, yes.
Uh-huh. Jeanette, thank you very much. Elaine, you know about that one by any chance?
I'll have to refer to our map. That one isn't readily coming to mind right now, but it sounds fabulous.
You know, Fred Kent, we probably wouldn't be talking about this issue at all if it hadn't been for Zuccotti Park being in the news. But the encampment there raises a more fundamental question about the promise of public space. When people argue that it's our constitutional right to occupy a public park, are they right according to the law? And beyond the law, are they right according to the social contract? Are we entitled to occupy a public park and set up a permanent encampment of wall-to-wall tents?
That's a tough question. When I started my work, I was a really strong advocate for a very open public process and using public spaces. I organized Earth Day in 1970, and so I got my teeth cut at that. And we need those places to express ourselves without any hesitation. And perhaps they should be encamped. I don't have a problem with that. As long as we start to see what they're talking about and what might come out of it, because we're moving through an era right now of massive change in a wonderful way. And the feelings that they have are manifested all over the world. We hear about it from every corner of the world. And it's a great time. What do we get out of it in the end is what we're really all trying to figure out.
You can see the city's dilemma. Some members of the public are using Zuccotti Park, but that usage is preventing other members of the public from using it, probably in the way that it was designed to be used, which is an open space in a densely built-up business district for people to eat lunch in or use after work, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and you need that, but maybe they could use half of it or something like that, or maybe they close the street and you do stuff on the street. You bring in food trucks or something like that. So you can adjust the public space that is could be available as a way to add to the experience people there. Because I think it's a great – what's going on is so many people are coming there to see what's going on. So it's a whole scene in a sense. That makes it even more public.
From your perspective as a public space advocate – do you like this whole idea of the privately owned public spaces, of making the trade-off for taller building privileges or other zoning privileges for the developers in exchange for creating some of these public spaces?
I don't think we've gotten anywhere near the benefit that we should have gotten. They got, 20% extra floor area, which is a phenomenal benefit for some of these plazas. And some of them are good, but they were never really thought to be the gathering places that everyone wants in their community. They were more visual spaces. They were kind of a place where you might have a few plants and maybe a bench or two. And that's not really a good place. There's a whole level of comfort and activity and things to do in a really good square or a really good place. And those plazas never really got to be that. They're more visual.
So maybe one of the side effects of Occupy Wall Street will be to raise consciousness about the quality of these privately owned public spaces in general around the city.
Absolutely. There's a reservoir, 400 or 500 of these spaces that are, in my view, less than optimal in terms of what they offer. But the possibilities of creating community gathering places that add to the value of those communities and the prestige of those in people's minds, the ownership, that's a big deal, and that's not what this is about.
And Yolaine, that's what we're after with this New York World WNYC collaboration, creating the map of all the privately owned public spaces. Now that Zuccotti Park has gave more people a sense that such things exist. And as you write this up for your articles, what's your goal? Are you going to try to put pressure on city officials to upgrade the usefulness of many of these privately owned public spaces?
I think right now our goal is to first get our hands on these records, these contracts that set up these spaces, and to kind of verify what places aren't living up to their end of the deal, and to make those contracts accessible to the public. We'll also be keeping the map available for people to continue commenting on if they decide that they want to continue visiting spaces. And depending on how much more feedback we get, we might be following up with it again.
Let's get another couple of quick phone calls in here about some spaces. Elizabeth in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Elizabeth.
Oh, yes. Good afternoon. Thank you.
Sure.
I'm sorry I didn't have the chance to participate in this project because I'd heard about it and was very excited. I live in India a lot of the time, and in Delhi, certainly this whole concept of private and public spaces and taking care of them is a major issue. Just to contribute, I've been living across the street from Greenacre Park on East 51st Street for many years. And I even was allowed, even every morning I would have the echo of the waterfall up the seven flights in my flat. And this park is so, since 1971 when it was opened, it was at the Rockefeller Malls who had designed it with the work of Hideo Sozaki, the Japanese architect who died earlier this year. And I've been astonished how many people in New York do not even know about this. And I watch people walk by. There is a cafe. It's open to the public every day. There's a horticulturist, and it's one of the two privately endowed parks in the city, aside from Paley Park. So I just wanted to contribute that.
Great.
Because it's magnificent.
Because it's good to know about the good ones. Now, Fred, you said, did you want to say something
about
Elizabeth's
call? Well, you see what that does. That sort of glows on a street. And people in that neighborhood just love it. I was there once, and I was with some elderly people, and I moved my chair. And they said, don't move the chair. You know, this is a public space. I mean, it was a little ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But when people own, they love a place, they own it. And then they come on a regular basis, you know, once a day, three times a week. And that's what these places can become if we treasure them as really good destinations.
And with respect to the elevated space at 55 Water Street, you said it's just there and people can use it, but it would be better if there was some,
you know,
means.
Marvelous gateway or some beautiful entranceway.
Well, you said before, like maybe a cafe or a coffee shop, and I think John in Manhattan wanted to push back against that idea. Mm-hmm. John?
Hi, Brian. Good morning. Great project. I'm just amazed that the gentleman, your male person guest, thinks that you can't enjoy a public space without eating and drinking and a coffee cart in a cafe. People can go and enjoy a beautiful space without eating and drinking and littering and so forth.
I'm going to leave it there, but do you take his point?
Well, I take your point, but, you know, you don't have to eat. You don't have to drink. You can go and sit. As well. So you've got all these offerings, and going and reading a book and being nice and quiet is part of that.
Here's an architect calling in. Barbara, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Oh, hi. Well, I was working at a firm in the 80s when it was all the rage to create these public spaces, and one of them that I worked on was 712 Fifth Avenue, which has Bendel's in it. And part of the agreement, there was a Lalique glass window in the central townhouse that became Bendel's. And the space behind it was supposed to be an open atrium, not used for a selling space, but it quickly became selling space. And I think they may have revised their agreement. But there was a bonus given for that, plus a passage through from Fifth Avenue to the lobby of 712 Fifth Avenue, which also got closed in by Bendel's.
So if you helped to design a privately owned public space, were you doing it with certain characteristics, certain qualities in mind?
Well, in this case, it was, and I actually didn't work on the Bendel's interior. I worked on the tower, but it was always part of Bendel, so it's not the type of space you're really talking about here. Uh-huh. But
they closed it in more and more anyway.
It was supposed to be open, and the function was really, I mean, the thing about what was going on in the 80s is function was not really considered necessarily. There were a lot of open spaces that created that were not very well designed.
Thank you so much for chiming in. We're almost out of time. Fred, what about the publicly owned public spaces, a.k.a. parks? Should we not assume that publicly owned public spaces are far and away better than the private ones?
Well, in this city, they have become extraordinary. We have some of the best parks anywhere in the world, especially, you know, Central Park and Prospect Park and
yeah,
those.
But also these little pocket parks and other little plazas that are really public.
The plazas that have been put into the streets, some of those are extraordinary, and they're really alive. There's one right next to Lincoln Center that's not part of this program. A bonus, but it is a lovely little place. And Lincoln Center is pretty sterile and kind of a little bit off-putting.
So you think the publics still beat the privates?
The publics beat the privates. And that shouldn't be the way. It should be the other way around. There should be like a competition among the privates to add value to their properties and create these wonderful gathering places.
Well, maybe after this, there'll be more of that. Fred Kent, president of the advocacy group, the Project for Public Spaces, and Yelaine Almanzar, a reporter for the new news site, The New York World, our partners on this privately owned public spaces assessment project. And Fred, thank you. And Yelaine, this has been great. And obviously this collaboration between us is ongoing, so we'll see how we can follow up in terms of affecting the enforcement of the true public nature of these parks by the city and see what else we discover. So this has been fabulous.
Absolutely, Brian. Thanks again to your listeners for participating. It was great.
And listeners, you can still do it. The map is up at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. See where all these privately owned public spaces are. Continue to post your experiences and read Yelaine's printed work from the New York World that you can access through our site too, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we'll talk about the scandal at Penn State and particularly focus on Joe Paterno. He was a role model not just for sports prowess but for integrity itself. So a lot of people are disillusioned today. And then we will talk to Erin Brockovich, the real Erin Brockovich, not Julia Roberts. She is now writing fiction to encourage environmental activism. Stay with us.